Hello and welcome to 1001 Albums Podcast. Today I'm talking The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars by David Bowie with Alan McGee.
Archetype Messiah Rockstar. That's all I wanted to do. And I used the trappings of kabuki theater, mime technique, fringe New York music, like my references were Velvet Underground, right. Whatever. So Ziggy was, for me, a very simplistic thing. It was what it seemed to be, an alien rock star. And for performance value, I dressed him and acted him out. I left it at that. But other people reread him and contributed more information about Ziggy than I had put into him.
So I'm very excited to be joined by Alan McGee. How you doing, Alan?
Good, James. Very good.
Wonderful. What's going on?
Nothing. I've just been out walking. And the lockdown, the usual lockdown day, really, to be honest, you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair enough. Although you've been keeping busy, you've been doing plenty of stuff online. And
I've been doing a few bits and pieces, but nothing, you know. I mean, I'm missing bands touring, gigs, doing Q&As. I'm missing all that, but you know, at the end of the day, I don't even think we're halfway through this thing. I think we'll be lucky to get next summer in, if I was being honest with you. Do you think so? If you think about it, James, compared to where we were 3 months ago when they closed it, we're not that much further on. You know, if you're talking about putting a show on, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you see about this, people doing drive-in shows and things?
I mean, there's always going to be things like that, but to go back to shows the way that we know shows, I think there's a good chance it will spike, I think, at the tail end of the year, and I think it's going to take next summer out. I can't see us getting through this until we find medication to... Yeah. To knock it out, you know what I mean? That's what I think. It's the only way we're going to really be able to move on it, you know what I mean? But I hope I'm wrong, you know what I mean? I mean, I do hope I'm wrong, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no. I hope you're wrong as well. But unfortunately, Alan, when it comes to music business, you're normally right, which is a shame.
Oh, God.
All right, well, let's not talk about those horrible things. Let's talk about an amazing album. You know, because I we've spoken before in my other gig and the live Q&As and things. And it was one of those things that I was just having a look through this list, right, of the 1001 albums. And I don't know if this is a book that you're aware of, if you've ever read or had a flick through at all. Your bands, you are just, even just having a cursory glance through, there's at least 12 albums that you were heavily involved with that have made this list. On a list of 1001, that's more than the Beatles. You know what I mean? That's more than Bowie.
Say that again, James. Say that again. Do you have any albums have I got in the top 1,000?
You've got 12.
Have I?
Yeah.
That's good.
Psycho Candy, Isn't Anything, Loveless, Nowhere, Definitely Maybe, Morning Glory, Giant Steps, Screamer Delicate, Vanishing Point, Bandwagon-esque, Copper Blue, and Fuzzy Logic.
God. Good point.
You think, oh, there were some good ones in there, I suppose. And that's, you know, there's some stuff missing there. There's a couple of Ride albums that I think, you know, a couple of other Primals albums that I think would probably deserve a place. But yeah, I mean, that is...
That sounds good.
It's not bad, is it? But anyway, well, so we'd said, you know, we could talk about any of those, but Actually, your choice was to talk about Ziggy Stardust and the and the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
I just thought we were talking about Ziggy Stardust because I put up. It was 48 years since it came out the other day, and that album for me was, to be honest, I mean, I was buying T-Rex records and Slade records before Boy Out, but that record, it was the first real significant album I bought. Do you know what I mean? You knew when you bought Ziggy Stardust, you were like, I mean, because I heard it in a school common room, second year school common room, so I would be about 11, and an older boy brought it in, I think some guy about 15 year old, I was 11, he put it on, I think he only got through to Hang On To Yourself halfway through the second side of the record, and then we had to go into classes, but it blew my mind. And I remember hearing 5 years for the first time when I was like, God, what is that? Pushing through the market square, so many mothers sighing. News had just come over, we had 5 years left crying. News guy wept and told us Earth was really dying. Cried so much his face was wet. Then I knew. I bought the record and I was obsessed with Bowie. You know what I mean? I was like, absolutely got me in one. And that was forever. Do you know what I mean? Once you got into Ziggy Stardust, I think Ziggy Stardust is, I mean, it's like hunky dory. It's as good, really, to be honest. I mean, I wasn't saying this is good, but for some reason, Ziggy is a bigger record for me. I don't know, maybe because I was 11 and it was me really getting into rock and roll for real. Do you know what I mean? Me buying T-Rex records and Slade records was the pop McGee. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And then when I bought Ziggy Stardust, that was for real. That was like, this is rock and roll. This, and it, you know, I didn't really understand he would be with me for the rest of my life. And if you think about it, he nuanced your taste with Rebel Rebel and all the great records that Boy put out, you know, the rock and roll records he put out. And then when punk happened, you know, Boy had shaped it, that there was a generation of people like me that were 15, 16, that were like, it really is good music. And punk came along and we got punk. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not sure if Boy hadn't commercialised that whole thing that he got into. Because basically he was really coming for the Velvets, wasn't he? Anthony Newley and the Velvets. He just commercialised it. Because Lou wasn't that big, was he? You know, he broke up the Velvet Underground and he put out Walking the Wild Side around that time. And it was a hit, but it wasn't a massive hit, Jake. I think it was a minor hit. It wasn't a number one, do you know what I mean? But it was like, he nuanced people like me and Bobby Gillespie, you know, into, you know, kind of bending to punk, do you know what I mean? You know? Didn't know what time it was and the lights were low. I leaned back on my radio. Some cat was laying down some "Get It On Rock and Roll," he said. Then the loud sound, it seemed to fade. It came back like a slow voice on a wave of fades. That one, no DJ, that was Hazy Cosmic Jive. There's a star man waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he blew our minds.
Yeah. And did you, were you one of those people, whenever there's a documentary or whatever, anyone talks about Bowie in the UK, they always talk about the Starman performance on Top of the Pops? Was that something?
Yeah, that was a big one. Actually, I think I saw Starman and loved it before I heard the album. I might be talking shit here, but I think that's what happened. Because I think I went back to school August, September, and heard the album. I don't think I... And then If 48 Years was the other day, so that was June. I don't think I bought it in the first month. I think it was out a couple of months, and then I got it because somebody played me. You know, I knew of them because of Starman, and I really liked it. But I think I probably had put that into my brain as a pop thing again. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
It wasn't until I got to 5 years and Hang On to Yourself and Soul Love and Moonage Daydream and Lady Stardust that I really got the depth. I mean, as much as 11-year-old me could get anything, do you know what I mean? You know, I'm still a pop kid, really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I was getting into this weird and wonderful guy, you know, was David Bowie.
But it's interesting to me that it's almost like he's so good, Bowie, that he can just do these singles, he can just do these pop songs. Like, and he's so good. He's like, you know what? I don't even want to do these under my own name. I'm going to do these under a character because these are songs that other people would kill for. And he's like, no, I don't. That's not me. I'm going to put a character doing this. You know what I mean?
He was at the height of his powers around that time, really, wasn't he? Because he wrote All the Young Dudes, gave it away to Motley Hoople. I mean, can you imagine giving away All the Young Dudes? The only person that I've ever met that's that prolific and that good is Noel Gallagher, to be honest. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that it was so, when I was working with him back in the 90s, it was so effortless that's why we all were a bit deluded by the whole thing. I thought it was going to go on forever, James. Like, you know, this is a guy that would roll into the studio and give away the master plan as the track on a 12-inch, and that happened. I remember being in the studio with Liam, and we were going, why is this not a single? And no, just wasn't, because we thought it was all going to go on forever.
Do you know what I mean?
That's got to be in Noel's top five ever songs, hasn't it, really?
Absolutely,
to be honest. And it might even be his best song, but it's definitely up there. And that was given away as a B-side. It wasn't even a... Actually, that's a number one single. Anybody, you know, and I'm talking about Elton John and any of these people, if they've written that, it'd be a worldwide number one, do you know what I mean?
Take the time to make some sense of what you want to say, and cast your words away upon the waves. Sail them home with acquiesce on a ship of hope today. And as they land upon the shore, tell them not to fear no more. Sing it loud and sing it proud today.
No, absolutely. And even when you look at these other tracks that he did around the same time as well, you've got like John, I'm Only Dancing, which was a B-side, Velvet Goldmine B-side, Sweethead B-side. These are great songs. And then also, I also think of, you know, when you go back to Hunky Dory, I think you've got stuff on there like Oh You Pretty Things and Life on Mars. And
Hunky Dory is an incredible piece of work. But you know what? Man Who Sold the World's pretty good. Down to it. When he was trying to be Anthony Newley, you know, Gospel According to Tony Day and Laughing Gnome was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was never going to be number one, but it was still pretty good. I mean, I quite like Laughing Gnome because it's so bonkers. But Gospel According to Tony Day is a great track.
I even like, there's a tune he did like, Over the Wall We Go, oh, Coppers and Nanas.
I probably know it, but you know, it's a reasonably good Anthony Newley David Bowie impersonation tune.
Well, thanks, Alan.
Over the wall we go, oh, coppers and nanas. Over the wall we go, leave them a note saying wish you was here. I know all the best ways to break out of here. I helped a young laddie called Ivan. I bundled him over the wall last night. Then he climbed back and he grabbed me tight. He uttered some words that I can't say to you, 'cause he remembered that he was a screw. Over the wall we go, oh, coppers and nuts.
But even all this stuff, like I've got a couple of his sort of Can't Help Thinking About Me and stuff like that. That mod stuff he did was great as well. He just, anything he turned his hand to, he could just do so brilliantly.
I mean, I've watched programmes when they've talked about how he failed and then he succeeded. You know what I mean? It was one of the BBC about a year ago. And it's kind of true. He got it wrong for so long. And yeah. then when he started to get it right, God, he was just so incredible. I think Mick Ronson was... Mick Ronson was the arranger, wasn't he, really? And he was the band leader and the arranger. And he could take the Bowie songs and just arrange them. And I think that was just a killer team.
Yeah.
David Bowie and Mick Ronson. That's why they won, thank you.
Yeah, I was watching a documentary about it the other day, and apparently that he'd originally he wasn't going to front it. It was going to be this hairdresser, this like beautiful, I can't remember the guy's name now, but and they played the original demos and they just didn't sound that great. And it's only when they got them into studio with Woody and with Mick Ronson, and suddenly they just morphed into this magic. One of the things I was going to say is there's a link to Oasis, is the fact that in Star he sings about rock and roll star, and I'd love to know whether Noel actually, you know, because people don't, you know, people talk about a rock star, but then
he was a David Bowie fan. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'll tell you something that I've never really admitted before. I remember when Rock and Roll Star was on the demo, the very first demo. Of the Oasis demo when I got it. And I always was secretly like, well, fucking knock that one off the album. I'm not having a song created called Rock and Roll Star. That's what I was like. I was like, I thought it was a shit name for a song until way down the line, and then I went, oh, this'll work, you know?
But I, you know, it's when you think, because that phrase rock and roll star, you don't really hear it very much. You know, not, people talk about being a rock star, but Oasis were like, no, we're not rock stars, we're rock and roll stars.
Well, that was the thing about everything in the 90s. It was like, you know, early 90s anyway, because we were always saying, we're not indie, we're independent. We hate rock stars, but we like rock and roll stars. It was like, it's just wordplay, really. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it really means that much. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Fair enough. I was listening to this on decent headphones the other day, and often this is one of those albums that I just have on all the time, and I don't even really think about it. But actually thinking about it and listening to the headphones, like the bits, the production is just so brilliant. Like there's parts in the like the use of stereo and things like this, and this is only 72. This is very early in the use of stereo. And yet, like, for instance, in the Ziggy song, when he's saying, like, well, where were the spiders? And that comes, that sounds like it's an alien talking to you, you know, because it comes from a different point in the mix. It's just so brilliantly produced.
Process David Bowie, he felt like, he didn't feel like a man or a woman, he just felt like, he felt as if he came from space. I've seen different people, you know, talk about that. I think Noel Gallagher once said that, it's like, you know, about Bowie, and it's like, it's the truth, you know, it's like, he didn't Suede were obviously working class guys that, you know, they were a good band, really good band actually, right? You know, but you knew where they come from. Even Mark Bolan. But David Bowie, where did he come from? That's what everybody felt. That's one of the reasons we loved him, you know? I mean, it was almost religious, David Bowie. It still is to me. Yeah. It still really is. You know, I mean, you know, and it's just unbelievable, you know? I mean, you know.
Did you meet him, Alan?
I never met him, man. I mean, some of my friends all met him. I mean, like Bobby met him with Jim Reid at a festival, and Jim was paralytic drunk, blah, blah, blah. And Bowie was going up, Jim fell in the mud in front of Bowie at some festival, and Bowie was just kind of just being Bowie, just looked and kind of thought it was kind of amusing. And I think Noel met him once, but I never met him. I never, but all my pals have ran into him, but I don't think I ever, I mean, well, I know if I met David Bowie, I was never in his company, you know.
If you had met him, do you think you would have been... would have been able to cope, or do you think it would have, you would have turned to jelly?
Okay, you know, I mean, part of your childhood, I'd have just been polite and just went, look, absolutely changed my life back in the day. Still like your music, I'd have just been cool, do you know what I mean?
Mm. Do you think? I don't know.
I think so, I'm hoping so. A couple of times I've not been cool, I couldn't talk a couple of times when I've met people, you know. You know, it's, like, it's not even obvious people. One of them was James Brown. And one of them was Neil Young, and I kind of was in a room with him, and I didn't have the balls, either one, to fucking go and steal the deal. I just walked out because I was too far. Both times I was taken by surprise, though, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Literally, I was in a little hotel, and well, not a little hotel, a posh gaff in Glasgow called One Devonshire Gardens. It's the poshest hotel in Glasgow. It was in the 90s, and I went into this wee posh sitting room. It's one of these like private houses, except it's uber fucking expensive, blah blah blah. And I was staying there, and James Brown was staying there. He was playing Glasgow, and I had a band playing. And I walked in, James, and to go and get a cup of tea in the sitting room, and James Brown was just sitting against the wall, kind of spaced out. And I just was like, fuck. Oh, what can you say? It was naked, man. It was fucking naked, right? I was like, and I bottled it, James. I wasn't good, but I walked back out the room.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine meeting James.
Kind of seemed similar. Not quite as mad as that one. I was in the fan club dressing room when we were playing with Neil Young, and I had to put them on the tour, and Neil walked into the dressing room. I should have spoke to Neil Young. Because Neil Young, when you know Neil Young's cool. I mean, with James Brown, fuck knows what he would have said, do you know what I mean, you know?
Yeah, well, he had such a crazy background and stuff, growing up in a brothel and all that. You know, he's just such a crazy guy. But Neil Young, yeah, you do get the impression he'd probably be all right.
Yeah, and I should have said hello to Neil, you know.
Oh, well, at least you still got the chance with Neil.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Fair enough.
That boy's incredible. That record's... I mean, it's just... You know what the thing is about Ziggy now? You have to be a certain age to understand the significance of that record, really, to be honest. Because it's just, if you're younger, I think it's just one of the many David Bowie albums. But that album was his breakthrough record, man. What made David Bowie fucking huge in Britain. That record, he went from being 40 in the charts to number one when Ziggy Stardust. It changed his life, do you know what I mean? You know, changed, and it also changed my life, changed a generation of people like me, you know what I mean? You know, we just love David Bowie.
Yeah. And I mean, when you look at the track listing, I mean, starting off with 5 years, I mean, you mentioned that 5 years kind of blew you away. I think it's a very strange tune to start the album with, that slow, deliberate drum beat, and it's all these big open, empty chords. Like, such a strange way to start the album, I think. I mean, it's brilliant for the whole concept as well, because, you know, this loose idea of, you know, this aliens come to Earth.
In Corona time, how great is that song?
Oh, God.
Think about it. You're 5 years. And it was cold and it rained, so I felt like an actor. And I thought of more, and I wanted to get back there. Your face, your race, the way that you talk. I kiss you, you're beautiful. I want you to walk. We got 5 years. Five years, what a surprise, we've got 5 years, my brain hurts.
it's sort of setting this thing up like, you know, we've got 5 years. And as you listen to this, you're thinking, well, what do you mean we've got 5 years? You know, what does this mean? Like, this story through
it's
this whole...
It's a nightmare, isn't it? And it's a bit like... kind of what we're in the middle of at the moment.
I know, absolutely. And I was listening to this, as I say, the other day, and Rock and Roll Suicide as an album closer, I just think is one of the best album closers of all time. And when you've got that, it just builds and builds, and he's sort of, you know, he's pleading, you know, and it's such a beautiful message as well, as he's pleading at the end. You're wonderful, you know, he's really screaming it out. We can be wonderful. And then just bum, bum, bum. Bam, done.
He's amazing, man. He's amazing.
So, Alan, well, just to finish it off, do you think this deserves to be on the 1001 albums list?
Yeah, beyond. I mean, it's probably... Ziggy Stardust is probably my favourite ever record, only because it's just what it means to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's a brilliant record, but what it means to me personally, that record, because that was me 11 embracing rock and roll. I didn't really know that's what I was doing when I was getting into Ziggy Stardust, but that's essentially was the pathway record, wasn't it, to the glam thing and the punk thing, you know?
Absolutely. Alan, thank you so much for your time, mate. Well, really good speaking.
Be safe, all right? Be cool, man.
Speak to you soon, man.
Bye, mate. I could fall in love.